On this week's episode of It's Always Something in Philadelphia, we'll talk Eagles, Sixers, Phillies, and yes, despite Alex's wishes, I will mention the Flyers. We'll go into the Wentz report, came out this week. We'll talk about the Eagles coaching search and the progress that's been made there. We'll move on to the Phillies. They had a big acquisition this week on the free agent market. I wrote a piece about it. We'll get into a little bit of what Archie Bradley will bring to the team. We'll talk about a few trade rumors with them. And then we'll get into the Sixers. Obviously, since we last spoke, James Harden went to the Brooklyn Nets in a massive 14 deal. We'll talk about what the Sixers do next and whether or not, you know, the Harden move is going to really put a more drastic damper on their season than we may have thought. All that and more ahead on It's Always Something in Philadelphia. Welcome to It's Always Something in Philadelphia. My name is Kenny Adkins. As always, with me, Alec Leipsch. And Alec, the Eagles are surrounded with a little bit more bad news. Who would have thought?
Yeah, that's the norm these days. And I was just watching the Suns versus game, which Mikal Bridges is doing quite well. So not too great day.
There's always something working against us. But as for that news the Eagles are involved in, another report came out this week. Kind of detailing Carson Wentz's behavior with the coaching staff, with the locker room, and just kind of showed that he has kind of been acting out the past few seasons, is kind of a difficult teammate to play with. And it mirrors a report that came out a few seasons ago that a lot of people kind of wrote off. But if it's being doubled down like this, it makes me wonder if you know, really he is the problem in the locker room. What did you make of the report, and what do you think it means for Wentz's future with the team?
Yeah, like you just said, the fact that it's come up again, and also just the fractured relationship that Winston Peterson had, this basically confirms that. You could see a lot of times in games where Wentz would audible something. He would do the kill thing with his chest like pulled out. In the Inquirer, that was reported as a pissing match that Peterson and Wentz would have. Now, I don't know why it took until after Peterson was fired for this to come out. That seems, I'm not discrediting any of the information in the report. It seems pretty accurate to me, but I just wonder about the timing of it all.
Yeah, I agree. Essentially what the article was saying was that Wentz didn't really trust any of the coaches, any of the plays being called for him. And the rate at which he audibled was kind of done so, like you said, just kind of out of spite. For the plays that were being called by Peterson or whoever was calling the plays over the course of the past few seasons. I think a lot of us fans kind of looked at it as him just having full control of the offense, which he clearly did. But, you know, clearly it was something a little deeper than that. I'm curious as to what extent the locker room dynamic was problematic with Carson Wentz. We've had a lot of teammates of his this season come out and publicly defend him, say that they love playing for the guy, and that he wasn't the only issue going on with the Eagles season. So I don't really know what, obviously I don't have eyes on the inside, so you can't really be sure what is happening between, you know, those doors. But it also seems that, you know, we talked about it last week, they chose Doug over Carson. And I think that's kind of because the report made it out to seem that Howie Roseman is particularly fond of Carson Wentz. And if the report is accurate, he might be the only one in the entire organization.
That seems to be growing more and more true by the day that Lurie and Roseman are on the side of Wentz here, and they will continue to stick with him. And that has permeated into the coaching search, where whoever the Eagles end up hiring, anytime they have an interview with one of the coaches, the candidates mentioned who still haven't been hired, they've made it clear that they want that coach to have a relationship with Wentz or to try and fix him. Whether that changes over time, it probably won't. But we can be optimistic in saying that maybe a coach can bring in a different look than just sticking with the same old stuff that didn't work.
Yeah, I don't really love the idea of bringing in a guy specifically to fix one player or another, however good that player may be. I think that can kind of be a destructive way to go about the search. I think it makes more sense to bring in a guy who is best suited in your eyes to run the program, to run the team. But that definitely looks to be the approach the Sixers, I almost call them the Phillies and then the Sixers, the Eagles are taking with this process. It looks like as of now, nothing has been decided yet, obviously, but Brian Daboll with the Bills, it looks like he's staying there. That was a report that came out, I believe, today or yesterday. Josh McDaniels is a name that's been heavily linked to the Eagles. They interviewed him on Sunday, I believe, and the interview lasted almost like 9 hours, which is, I can only imagine how insufferable that must be to sit in there with anybody on the Eagles for 9 hours. It looks like as of now, McDaniels is out in front. There's still guys like Joe Brady who are in the running, but what do you think can be deduced from the process so far in terms of what direction you think the Eagles are going to go in?
They are very interested in Josh McDaniels. He's for good reason. I mean, he's a proven offensive coordinator. He's been, you know, he's been at the helm of one of the most efficient offenses long-term over the past 10 to 15 years, but also Tom Brady was there for a lot of that. So I don't know how much to make of his success absent of an all-time great quarterback, but he's been in the league a while, and it doesn't seem like this organization is going to take too many risks when it comes to this. Like, they're probably not going to bring in Lincoln Riley, for example, although that would be interesting. They're not going to take that Chip Kelly type risk again. Deuce Staley is also another guy who will get a serious look just because he's already in the organization. The Eagles seem to love themselves despite themselves being the problem over the past few years. I really like the idea of Joe Brady, honestly, because he worked with Joe Burrow at LSU, and he's had a meteoric rise throughout the NFL ranks. He was the Panthers offensive coordinator this past year, and a lot of Panthers fans love that guy. So, I don't know. I'm always of the belief to try something new when something old hasn't been working, but we'll see.
Yeah, you mentioned with them not being willing to take much of a risk. I think McDaniels would likely be McDaniels or Deuce Staley, I would say, would be the two safest picks, you could say. Joe Brady is probably the front runner in my hopes, at least. He's a very young, offensive-minded coach, and he – but like you said, you know, he hasn't had a ton of experience in the NFL, and he would likely be a riskier pick. Another name that the Eagles have been tied to – or I should say every team in the NFL that needs a head coach is Eric Bieniemy with the Chiefs. And he's kind of had an interesting coaching hiring cycle. He hasn't really gotten a ton of interest. Now that might be because the Chiefs are obviously still in the playoffs and due to the rules, which I vehemently disagree with, you cannot interview a coach during their team being in the playoff. Eric Bieniemy has kind of fallen off of a lot of people's radars for some reason, which is strange because this season, throughout the course of the regular season, he was kind of pegged as the one guy that was going to be the number one pick for any team that could get him. But for the Eagles, a report I saw said that the optics weren't great with them taking another Andy Reid tree guy, a guy that came from the Andy Reid coaching tree. Obviously, you know, we know Doug Peterson was that. So it looks like at least in that sense, they may be trying to go in a different direction, but obviously, we still have, you know, yet to see what they do with the coaching search. I just hope, you know, they're able to get it done somewhat soon, not let a lot of the top candidates go off the board, and really just have somebody ready to actually get in there and, you know, start instituting a culture, start getting the team together, and just, you know, get rolling in the right direction.
I think the Bieniemy thing is just because teams don't want to wait around for him and they want to get their next head coach in the building, and he could feasibly still be employed for another month with how the Chiefs are going. Shout out to Andy Reid having the biggest balls of the postseason with that fourth down conversion at the end there. Very interesting.
Chad Henne, imagine if he pulls a Nick Foles. Super Bowl MVP as a backup.
We all hope that Patrick Mahomes is back there next week because I'll be honest, I don't want to watch Chad Henne. But
I've been rooting for that Bills Chiefs AFC Championship since the playoffs started, so I think that could really be a game for the ages with the way the Bills are playing with the Chiefs' offensive firepower. It's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, I agree. But back on the Eagles, I just think they're looking to, I think they're going to make a move soon. Especially with how long they were just in an interview with McDaniels, how much information they have on Staley. Todd Bowles has been mentioned too. They have some familiarity with him, obviously. I think we're closer to the finish line than, you know, the outside perception maybe.
Agreed. Well, I certainly hope that's the case. We opened up a mailbag this week. We tweeted out on Twitter. We wanted to get some interaction from you guys. We did get a question about the Eagles. Birdo Joe asked us which starters will be gone by week one on offense. Obviously, the Eagles went through quite a lot of starters this season. They had the most offensive line combinations in the history of the NFL, I believe. Alec, you have the list of exactly who started on week one, if you wouldn't mind reading that out for us. Some names on there might surprise some people.
Yeah, this is going to be painful for a few of you. So Wentz, Miles Sanders, Boston Scott, Alshon Jeffrey, DeSean Jackson, Greg Ward, Jason Peters, Isaac Seumalo, Jason Kelsey, Matt Pryor, because Brandon Brooks was hurt, and Lane Johnson.
All right, so I'm just going to take it and rephrase the question as which of those guys will not be starting? So who will be back actually starting with the team? And obviously it starts with Carson Wentz. Everything that's come out sounds like they're going to try to retain him and keep him as the starting quarterback going forward. As of now, I believe that's going to be the case. I believe they're going to hold on to him. I also believe Miles Sanders will be back. Jason Peters is pretty obviously gone, I would say. Seumalo will probably be back. Jason Kelsey, that's another one. He's kind of up in the air. He has talked about retiring. Wouldn't be surprised if he did so. Matt Pryor, I know you would love to see him come back, but
why me? Why am I the one?
Well, because you hate him. Because you hate watching him play. But no, I hope by goodness sakes he's gone. Hopefully Brandon Brooks will be back. Lane Johnson almost definitely be back. He's top three right tackle in the NFL. And the receivers, who really knows what the receivers were? On that list, who do you think is coming back and who do you want to see gone?
Ideally, I would like to see almost all of these guys traded or move on. Not that I have a personal distaste for any of them and I don't like seeing anyone lose their job or anything like that, but the Eagles need a fresh start. But anyway, I've said that plenty. I bet that Wentz is back. Miles Sanders has to be back for the offense to be functional. I bet that Boston Scott gets replaced by either a draft or an interesting signee, just replaced in the rotation. Alshon Jeffrey is probably gone. DeSean Jackson, I don't think they can get off his contract, so he's probably here another year. Greg Ward, would love to have him back. Jason Peters, gone. Seumalo, still here. Kelsey, probably going to retire. Matt Pryor, probably replaced by either Jack Driscoll, Brandon Brooks, or somebody they draft maybe. And Lane Johnson, hopefully back.
Yeah, it's obviously going to be quite a lot of turnover, it seems. Obviously, the core of the team is pretty old. And it would make sense for them to kind of revamp that offense. Defense needs it too, but, you know, we just focus on the offense for today. So there you go, Birdo Joe. And I think we heard from him last week. The Eagles' offense is hopefully going to look a whole lot different week one this coming season. Another mailbag question we had from Khalil Abdullah, and this is an interesting question. He said, which is the more passionate fan base, the 76ers or the Eagles? And you actually answered him on Twitter. So I'll let you start. If you had to pick a team that's more passionate, a fan base is more passionate about their team, would you pick the Sixers or the Eagles?
Yeah, well, first of all, thanks, Khalil. He's a writer off the glass with me, so I'm glad to hear from him. I think that they're just different passions. I mean, Sixers fans are just more they were maligned for much of the process. The national media just defecated basically on the Sixers rebuilding plan, whether that was fair or not. We don't need to relitigate that because everyone always has those arguments. But the Eagles' passion is more, I would say, established in this city just because, you know, it's they're the face of radio. They're like every like WIP callers are all mostly Eagles fans. And you only have to deal with them 16 to 18 times a year. So, I mean, it's just condensed into that like 4 month burst. So the passion definitely comes out louder among Eagles fans, but I would say Sixers fans are catching up.
Yeah, no, I would definitely agree with you. The NBA seems to, at least in this decade, have really had quite a rise among the youth, the youths, as I should say, as an old man myself. I'm just kidding, I'm not that old. But it seems to be growing faster than any other sport. But with that said, it still is football that is king. The NFL still dominates ratings. The NFL still dominates headlines. And Philadelphia, it has always been a football city. So I think that the Eagles are still the more passionate fan base. But, you know, you can argue that it's more fun to be a Sixers fan than it is to be an Eagles fan. There's more misery. There's a lot of misery involved in both. But, you know, I would probably say that the Eagles are definitely the more passionate fan base. So thank you, Khalil. It's a great question. Moving on, let's talk about the Phillies. Alec, we have some actual positive news to talk about the Phillies. And I would just like to take this second here to thank Dave Dombrowski. We know he's a big listener for the pod. Obviously, he heard my public plea last week for them to make a move, get something done. But the Phillies went out and acquired relief pitcher Archie Bradley for a one-year, $6 million deal. Archie Bradley immediately becomes the best arm in their bullpen, the most reliable option. He will likely fill the eighth or ninth inning role, could realistically be the Phillies closer. Obviously, there's a few guys going to be vying for that spot between him, Hector Neris, and Jose Alvarado. But I am ecstatic about this signing. One-year deal is almost can never go wrong. What did you think of the Archie Bradley news, and what kind of impact do you think he's going to have on the team this year?
When Kenny and I complained about the offseason, the lack of activity, or the doom and gloom we had about it, the pessimism, one of the things we wanted is just any reliever to get in there. And a one-year deal for $6 million is exactly what you want to do when you're financially capped like the Phillies are. Get a guy like that who's a productive reliever. He's had an above-average like fielding independent pitching, ERA plus, all those factors that account for things outside the pitcher's control. He's been a really effective reliever, and the Phillies are trusting him. It seems to be their closer based on the website, based on what Jim Salisbury said today. You can't hate this. This is exactly what they need to do.
Yeah. I think it's pretty realistic. He's going to be the closer just because he's going to be the most reliable arm coming out of the pen. Archie Bradley began his career with the Diamondbacks as a starter, transitioned to the pen in 2017, and was one of the, you know, near the top of the sport in terms of reliever success. Has a lot of experience closing. Last year, he was traded to the Cincinnati Reds. He ended up posting, I believe it was a 2.73 ERA last season. And he's just a really solid late inning option. He's got some swagger to him. He wears cool Jordan cleats. He's got the sweet beard. And he's kind of an intense guy, which at least on the diamond, which definitely lends itself to being able to handle high leverage late game situations. So you know, 1 year, $6 million. I think that's perfect. Obviously, it addresses a need the Phillies have had in the bullpen. Last year, they had the worst bullpen in the league, and it single-handedly kept them out of the playoffs. So they've definitely put a lot of effort into kind of revamping that bullpen, getting guys like Archie Bradley, obviously, Sam Coonrod, and Jose Alvarado. They're definitely putting in some effort and time and money into that spot. And I just really am excited about the Archie Bradley signing. I think he's going to end up being a very, very positive part of the season going forward. And if not, this is something interesting to consider. If the Phillies are just a complete disaster again, which we all know is highly likely, this is kind of morbid, but it's not super out there to believe that they could trade him to a contending team for, you know, rebuild pieces. So prospects, if that, and I don't want to think that way, but there is a silver lining in the Phillies being horrible if that were to be the case. So hope it doesn't get to that point, but Archie Bradley is going to be a great Philly.
Yeah, and I think the reason that the Phillies were able to get away with not paying him that much, because this is about what he would have gotten in arbitration anyway, I think it's because they gave him this closer role. They offered him, look, we'll allow you to be the full-time closer, and he took effectively a discount, or he broke even to come here, and that's a really good start by Dombrowski.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, a lot of this is the biggest move he's made thus far this offseason. But I mean, I don't really disagree with most of the moves he made. The Coonrod move was a little questionable just because the guy's not that good. And he seems like a guy you could have gotten on the waiver wire, he could have gotten DFA'd, you could have scooped him up. But who knows what is going to turn out to be with him. He's a guy that struggles with command, but has a really powerful, high velocity arm. And then Jose Alvarado obviously has some of the nastiest stuff in the game. But he is a guy that struggled with injuries. But still, you know, even with those additions, the Phillies do have somewhat of a revamped bullpen. You have to hope a guy like Connor Brogdon is going to play a big role after having a solid September last year, even though it was a small sample size. They do seem to like him a lot. So, yeah, it's nice to actually see them putting in work to improve the bullpen, because that was the most insufferable thing to watch all of last season. And then they also made another trade. They traded with the Boston Red Sox, little Dave Dombrowski swindling his old stomping ground. So they got CJ Chatham, an infielder. He's a prospect. I don't think he's made it to the majors just yet. But he's kind of like a utility infield guy, can play second, third, or short. And they only got him for a player to be named later. So clearly, you know, they view him as a guy who may be ready to come up to the majors and contribute, and he could definitely provide some depth in the infield for the Phillies.
Yeah, it's hard to dislike the move, especially since the outgoing package is just a player to be named later. He seems like he's just about ready to be a part of any major league roster. He was drafted in 2016 in the second round by the Red Sox. I'm not sure if Dombrowski was there for that, but there's obviously a connection, and he's very comparable to Scott Kingery, I would say, because he's very much a contact hitter and he doesn't really provide much value on offense outside of that, but he's a versatile defender. He could probably even play in the outfield if necessary, though the Phillies don't seem to need that. This coming now, before any decision on Didi Gregorius is made, makes me think that maybe there's something in the works with that.
Yeah, shortstop is a position that we've talked about in the past needing to be addressed for the Phillies. Obviously, they only had Didi Gregorius for a one-year deal last season. They could likely look to go re-sign him. They could also look in a few different directions. I think Chatham is definitely going to be able to provide some depth off the bench, but I don't know if they view him as a starting caliber shortstop just yet, which I mean, I doubt they would. But it's likely that the Phillies need somewhat of a stopgap guy at short. One of their top prospects, Bryson Stott, plays shortstop, and he's probably going to be ready to come up within the next two seasons, hopefully. So likely they'll be looking for another one-year deal, little flyer deal on a guy. Just gets somebody in there to hold down the fort this season to keep the team still competitive without, you know, committing major money and years to a guy that's going to clog it up for Bryson Stott coming up. One of our mailbag questions from Will Price actually had to do with this. He asked if we think the Phillies should look into bringing back Freddie Galvis, Phillies legend from the dark ages, we'll call him. I always liked Freddie Galvis. He was never the best hitter, but he was a defensive wizard, gold glove caliber shortstop. And he really would be a decent stopgap guy for them there. What do you think? Do you think it's realistic they would bring Freddie Galvis back? And do you think it would be worth it to do so?
I definitely think it'd be worth it as long as he's not that expensive, which I don't think he would be, because shortstops who don't hit that much, they don't seem to garner that much right now, especially with it's kind of an interesting infield free agency class this year. So, yeah, I would definitely take him back, especially just having a lockdown, you know, Didi Gregorius isn't known as a defensive whiz. Gene Segura definitely isn't at short. So having just a reliable option at short. The issue with Freddie Galvis when he was here is that, like, he was one of the best hitters on the Phillies, which was why they were bad. So now him being like the seventh or eighth best hitter maybe in the lineup, that could provide some – that could pay dividends.
Yeah, any lineup where you have Freddie Galvis batting in the two-hole, that's probably not going to get you a lot of wins. So obviously the situation would be a lot more positive for them this time around, and I think it would be worth it. I still would like to see Didi brought back, or them going after maybe Marcus Semien, maybe Andrelton Simmons. I think Andrelton Simmons would probably be my top guy just because he is unstoppable defensively. He might be the best defensive shortstop, one of the best defensive shortstops of all time. So Freddie Galvis would be an interesting name to watch. And I could definitely see it happening for the right price. Other buzz around the Phillies. Ken Rosenthal said on MLB Network that it looks like JT Realmuto is definitely going back to the Phillies. Archie Bradley actually tweeted out today, hashtag sign JT. So it seems like Bryce has gotten to Archie and told him what the agenda is. So that's obviously good to see. But it looks like the market has kind of slowed up elsewhere for JT. The Yankees were considered to be a player for him, but they just re-signed DJ LeMahieu, likely taking up the rest of their payroll for the season, or most of the rest of their payroll. And it really looks like the Phillies are in the driver's seat to retain Realmuto.
Yeah, and last week it was reported that they offered 5 years, 100 mil, which a lot of Phillies fans would see as a lowball offer. But this is the season of lowball offers, except for the LeMahieu contract. It's like the pandemic has hit every team really hard, and the Phillies are clearly, as we know, not absent of that. They're not exempt of that. So it seems that other teams also aren't going to spend on him. I heard an interesting point from Corey Seiden and Jim Salisbury the other day about how Toronto might be less attractive for JT, even if they strike out on George Springer, because of the tax implications. Obviously you're taxed higher and more, you know, in Canada. It's looking more and more likely that JT is a Philly on opening day in 2021, which would just, it would just relieve so many fans in this town.
Agreed. Yeah. I mean, I think that's definitely the guy we all want to see back. Nobody wants to see him back more than Bryce Harper. So we want to keep Bryce happy too. Real quick, one more name also tied to the Phillies, somewhat loosely, but it was an interesting rumor that started going around, was Andrew Benintendi, the Red Sox outfielder. He was actually Dave Dombrowski's first draft pick with the Red Sox. So obviously, you know, Dombrowski knows him better than anybody else. Dombrowski seems to like him as a player. He's had a down two seasons or so, but he still is near the top of the list in terms of outfield defense, and he still does have a decent bet. The rumored package, which I don't know how much actual legitimacy there is to this rumor, but it was kind of picked up by some of the outlets. The rumored package would be Mickey Moniak and a AAA arm, which I think you have to do because Mickey Moniak at his ceiling becomes Benintendi. And he would likely play center field for the Phillies, which isn't his natural position, but it would be hopefully an upgrade over Adam Haseley.
Hopefully. Benintendi's had some injuries these past few years, and like you said, he's not a natural center fielder. That would probably be just a stopgap for the center field position until Andrew McCutchen's contract expires and he's no longer a full-time starter. Then Benintendi can move to left. Maybe the Phillies can find a center fielder, either Haseley or Quinn beats him out, and we have like four good outfielders, unlikely, but possible. And I mean... The issue is which AAA arm it is. Because if it's like Adonis Medina, for example, I think I'm out on it because I think you're giving up a little too much for a guy who's like probably your sixth or seventh best hitter on a championship team. Because we know what the standard is for a championship lineup. And Benintendi on like the Dodgers, for example, is like way towards the bottom of their lineup. Now, we're not comparing ourselves to the Dodgers, but we can set those kinds of standards. I want to make sure that it's not an overpay for a guy that Dombrowski just likes.
I agree. Yeah, I would like a guy like Benintendi. I think outfield defense is really underrated. It's really fun to watch. That's why I was so big on a guy like Jackie Bradley Jr., who still could be out there for the Phillies. But yeah, if it's like Adonis Medina and Moniak, I likely wouldn't do that. Maybe I'd go as high as like Damon Jones per se. Damon Jones, likely a bullpen arm, struggled with command last season. That would essentially just be Damon Jones for Benintendi, because obviously Moniak is not projecting very well towards his future career at this point. But we'll see. Obviously, you know, the free agency market is starting to heat up a little bit. Trades are starting up a little bit more. The Padres actually just trade for my San Diego Padres, my favorite baseball team, just traded for Joe Musgrove. So it must be nice to be a Padres fan, because they just go out and get good players, which is something I'd like to see the Phillies adopt. It seems like a model that would bring success. But moving on, I could talk Phillies for hours, but I don't know if there's much more to say. Moving on, the Sixers had quite the tumultuous week. I think I've said the word tumultuous every week of this podcast, so I'm going to keep that streak going. It was certainly a tumultuous week for the Sixers. They lost out on the James Harden sweepstake. Whether you actually think they lost out by not getting him or not is a matter of personal opinion. They got kind of bodied by the coronavirus again, and a lot of people are in a different spot with this team in terms of opinion than they may have been last week. I know you are one of them as well. Give me your thoughts on the Harden move. It was a massive trade. What that means for the Sixers, what it means for the East, and what it means for the NBA.
Well, the Sixers were reported to be right at the finish line with the James Harden negotiations. But then it came out via Keith Pompey of the Inquirer, who often is right about this stuff, that the Rockets were using the Sixers basically with a Simmons and Tyrese Maxey package as leverage to get the Nets to pay more. They succeeded in that. They got a massive return package for Harden. And yeah, while the Nets paid like a really pretty penny for Harden, they are now, in my opinion, the best team in the East, because even though they can't defend anybody in the post, like Giannis, Antetokounmpo, and Joel Embiid are going to have a field day when they play the Nets, but it's not going to matter because the Nets can literally take turns with Kevin Durant, James Harden, and Kyrie Irving, just like iso ball, spread pick and roll type of stuff. And they can just take turns and drop 150 total. I mean, it's that, like, the Nets offense legitimately is terrifying from my, like, it's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, they are definitely going to be transcendent offensively. When you look at, they have two of the greatest scorers in the history of the game. And one of the best point guards we've seen in recent memory, in Kyrie Irving. It really did seem, when all that stuff was happening, when it was going down, that at any moment the Sixers were going to trade for James Harden. I remember at one point I was just – you and I were both just going back and forth, just scrolling our timelines on Twitter, refreshing as often as we could. And it just seemed like it was you know, impending, like it was going to happen any second. And then reports started coming out about the Rockets maybe asking for more than the Sixers were willing to offer. And I started to kind of think that maybe that was just them driving up the Nets' price. And it seems to have worked, because they really did get a whole lot from the Nets in terms of players, in terms of picks. But yeah, it is going to be obviously challenging. I mean, the Nets were already going to be a challenge for the Sixers with the scoring of Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. Now, when you add maybe the best pure scorer of all time, it definitely creates even more of an obstacle for the Sixers. And you could say what you want about the Nets having their problems with depth or interior defense. But, you know, like you said, when you're scoring as many points as they're going to be scoring, it's going to be tough for a lot of teams to keep up with them, at least offensively. But that does, you know, beg the question, now that the Sixers lost out on James Harden, one of the things you've been harping on the past few weeks is that they really do need that half-court creator. So, you know, we're left with the question of who's next. You know, what's next for the Sixers? What do they try to go for? Because a lot of the argument we made for the James Harden trade was maximizing Joel Embiid's championship window. So, obviously, they need to put the team around him now that's going to be able to do that. So what do you think is another possible option, a few possible options that are out there for the Sixers in trades and buyout markets? Like, what do you think is their next move?
The next man up in big trade rumors has been Bradley Beal, because the Wizards are bad, and he's been insane this year. He's scoring like Harden level this year, a pretty good efficiency despite everyone else on the Wizards just not being able to help him too much. He's also 26, 27. He's locked up for the same amount of time as James Harden. They have a player option the same year. But he's younger. He's never had reported issues with other teammates. He's an excellent shooter. He's just like he's a better offensive fit, like schematically, with most teams than a high usage guy like Harden. And he's also more of a optical fit in terms of like personalities and such. So I think that he would actually cost more than Harden in terms of trade pieces, just because there's going to be more teams that are in on him, I would think. And considering what Drew Holiday went for when he was traded to the Bucks this past offseason, which was 3 first-round picks, 2 swaps, and the Bucks' only 2 other guards, George Hill and Eric Bledsoe. And James Harden went for 4 picks, 4 swaps, Caris LeVert and Jared Allen. LeVert was then flipped to the Pacers. The Pacers gave Oladipo to the Rockets. That was like it. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if the Sixers even can put together that type of package unless the Wizards want Simmons.
Yeah, I mean, I think with any of the guys we're going to be talking about that legitimately bring what the Sixers are going to need, Ben Simmons is almost always going to have to be included in those conversations, especially when you talk about matching contracts and all that kind of stuff, but also just matching value. As anybody who's listened to the past few weeks knows, I've been a very strong proponent of maybe going out and getting Beal, maybe even over Harden at certain points, whether or not I was correct in that take, who knows. But I do love Bradley Beal. I would love to see them go after Beal. It likely would take Ben Simmons, but just, you know, if you watch the game this past week against the Grizzlies, like, yeah, they were shorthanded, but the Grizzlies are too. And at the end of the day, they're still the Grizzlies. We still have who is supposed to be our second best player and Ben Simmons starting and playing major minutes in that game. And they fell to the Grizzlies. The offense just doesn't click with Simmons. His scoring has just been non-existent this year. I think he's averaging like 12.5 points a game. He's gone down almost every season, his career. And on top of that, there was a play at the end of the game where the Sixers were down, I believe it was 2, and Ben Simmons is bringing the ball up the court, and with literally a second on the clock, he passes up the ball and kind of handcuffs. I think it was either Tyrese Maxey or Shake Milton, but just kind of completely handcuffs them with the clock running out, and the Sixers ended up losing. So we've talked about being willing to move on from Simmons in the past, but just the way the season has gone with the Embiid-less minutes and just watching Ben Simmons out there, it really is starting to get extremely frustrating, especially when you look at just his unwillingness to take any sort of step forward in terms of scoring. So I would be on board with a Beal trade, giving up Simmons, and then that obviously begs the question of whether or not they want to put him with Westbrook, which might be the worst backcourt duo of all time. But we'll see. I think it would be worth it for them to explore a Beal trade. Another name would be Zach LaVine. Zach LaVine is playing out of his mind this year. A lot of people might credit that to him being on a pretty poor team and taking a lot of shots, but I think when you look at the numbers he's putting up, it's hard to argue against him being a really, really solid player, really solid scorer in that combo guard spot. Do you think it would be worth it for the Sixers to go after LaVine?
I think it would be worth it for sure, because he'd be an excellent fit with the Sixers as a – like he's a good scorer, a good shooter. His playmaking is improving, especially this year, because the Bulls finally put him next to another playmaker in Kobe White. So he's kind of just allowed to play to his strengths a little bit more. And he's averaging almost 28 points a game on really good efficiency. That kind of player is almost exactly what the Sixers are looking for. And it would, like, I think the Bulls would try and ask for Ben Simmons. I don't think that would get them anywhere, but it would cost like probably, along with Danny Green's expiring contract, just to match salaries, Maxey and Thybulle at least, and probably another pick as well. So if Sixers fans are willing to sacrifice their endowment effect and actually let that happen, then yes, LaVine can come. But other than that, man, the Bulls are going to drive a hard bargain.
So you don't think the LaVine trade would take Simmons?
I don't, but I know that the Bulls would ask for him. I just don't think that – I don't think Daryl Morey is the type of guy to pull off that type of deal. I mean, Simmons is still locked up for four more years after this, and I know that we've been talking ourselves into Simmons becoming more than he is for years now, but LaVine only has this year and next year left on his contract. I'm going to get it more into this with a piece coming out later this week, but basically – I think LaVine is like a significant drop down from Beal, which is why it wouldn't cost Simmons. It's just that the Sixers don't have too many of those, like those B tier tradable assets or players. Like they have Simmons, which is like a prime asset, and then everybody else.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting point you make there, because in terms of the level of play, you could argue that Tobias Harris could be one of those B tier. But when you look at the contract that's attached to him, it's just not reasonable to believe that he could be the main chip in a trade just because of the money that the other team would be taking on. So I agree with you that LaVine is much more of a step down than Beal, but he still would be fun to watch. We haven't really had that type of guy, that type of player since Jimmy Butler. And LaVine brings much better shooting, much more multi-level scoring than Butler did. So I would be on board with getting a LaVine trade, but it just depends on what deal they're able to swing together.
There is one guy who may be the swing piece in all this who is on the Sixers currently, and that is Shake Milton, who has been honestly like insane this year. He's had excellent. He's like a sixth man of the year. Like I wouldn't say front runner, but he's in that. He's in that conversation for sure. In a lot of advanced metrics, he's like top 25 to 30. He's still a good shooter despite not even having that good of a 3-point percentage yet. He's got a really well-rounded game. He should have had the ball in his hands at the end of that Grizzlies game and he didn't. That was very frustrating. Tyrese Maxey wasn't even on the floor for that. I'm not gonna, not gonna slight Doc Rivers for one, questionable sub, but it's maybe the Sixers are just gonna ride out this season and let like Milton or Maxey grow into that role. I don't know, because in 2017-18, when the Sixers got like wobbled by the Celtics in the second round, it did feel like they were just like one ball handler away, and they now have one to two and a half if you count Seth Curry, of those guys who could grow into that role. So maybe they don't need like a top tier ball handler. I still think they do, but you could definitely talk yourself into Shake Milton possibly becoming that guy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's crazy to argue that he's been their second most valuable player this season behind Embiid.
That's the right take.
Yeah, I mean, he's been unbelievable. He's given scoring off the bench. He plays well with the starting unit. I actually just got my Shake Milton jersey this week, so that was a nice plus. Although I will say I am 0-1 in Sixers games when I wear that. But I love Shake Milton. He definitely has been a very, 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 very welcome surprise for the Sixers. And he's on a great contract too. So he's really bringing a lot of value to the team. And who knows, maybe he could develop into that LaVine-esque or Bradley Beal-esque type player we're looking at. So the Sixers still in good shape in the East. I still think they are one of the top three teams in the East. But obviously it got a little more challenging with the Nets obtaining James Harden. So we will see how the Sixers respond. Right now they are kind of ravaged by COVID protocols. It's kind of a tough stretch for the NBA season right now with all the COVID stuff going around. It's tough for everybody, obviously, but in terms of games being canceled for the NBA, do you think there's any legitimacy to the idea that they should maybe postpone the season until they can get it more under control?
I definitely think they should. There's just this the Sixers Thunder game on Sunday that was postponed was, I believe, the 14th postponed game of the season. That's out of control. I mean, the teams, first of all, when the schedule came out, there was way too much travel in that. I mean, everyone had to play each team twice, which meant you traveled to each city at least once in a pandemic. Like, no, Why was that on the table at all? They should have done like pods. Like, honestly, out of all the sports, the NHL has done the best job. Even though we're not a Flyers podcast, we got to give some credit to the NHL for actually instituting a regional schedule that makes sense in a pandemic. I don't know. I don't know what the breaking point is, to be honest. I mean, I don't know where the NBA draws the line in terms of, okay, we got to suspend the season, because we're already seeing guys, Karl-Anthony Towns just tested positive. Not that we need a celebrity to be the one to tell us, but that's often what gets people's attention. I don't know where it ends.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think money is a large contributing factor as to why they may not suspend it. Obviously they lose a lot of money if they lose a lot of games. But at this point, I mean, it's just, you know, every single week teams are just being ravaged by it. And even teams that aren't having players test positive with the contact tracing. I don't think I've said that word correctly once. But contact tracing has left teams playing shorthanded almost all over the league. Teams with just barely able to field 8 guys just going out there against some teams that are completely healthy. That doesn't seem to make sense for a competitive balance. But, you know, we'll see what happens going forward, whether or not they're able to get it under control, or if this is going to be the kind of season that we are stuck with going forward. Interesting that you mentioned the NHL, because, Alec, I'm going to say it. We are a Flyers podcast. Our Flyers are 2-0. I know you and I both watched both of their first 2 games, both against the Penguins, and the boys are buzzing. They beat the Penguins on Friday. Wednesday, 6-3, just completely clobbered them. And then again on Friday, 5-2. The NHL is, like you said, doing complete realignment of the divisions. So the Flyers division is still relatively the same, but the newest thing is the Northern division, which is all the Canadian teams. It's actually pretty cool to see. But the Flyers have looked really, really solid. The offense is buzzing. Carter Hart is playing well. Travis Konechny is playing well. Joel Farabee is playing well. So they look like they're really, really poised to be a solid team in the Eastern Conference this year. What are your thoughts on the first 2 games you watched for the Flyers, and are you ready to drink the Kool-Aid?
I'm already drinking the Kool-Aid. I mean, their offense is really fun and synergized. They get out and transition a lot of teams. And then they continue to pile it on after at the end of games. They've had now, I believe it's 2 empty net goals.
It's always, always electric.
Yeah, and that's all we can ask for, really. It's always going to be something there.
Yeah, so Flyers, early season success. I am fully ready to pivot all of my emotional reliance from the Sixers to the Flyers if need be. I'm prepared to do so. So I don't know if the Sixers need to hear that, if they're going to take that as a threat or not, but I mean it as a threat. Flyers have been really solid. One thing that can't be understated is the impact of Nolan Patrick this year. Obviously, Nolan Patrick lost all of 2019 to horrible migraines. He seems to be in better shape now. He's played both of the first 2 games for the Flyers, and he's had a really solid impact. He's also wearing, I think, he was at least wearing it in practice, but he was wearing kind of like a tinted visor, which I guess was supposed to help maybe with the visual strain kind of prevent it from getting the migraines. But that is a totally sweet look. Nolan Patrick is a baller, and I'm excited to see the Flyers make a push for the Stanley Cup. Also, I love beating the Penguins. I despise the Penguins, so.
Yeah, can't disagree with that.
Well, that's going to do it for us this week. Thank you guys for tuning in. Be on the lookout on alwayssomethingpod.com for new articles coming out this week. Alec just said he has a piece coming out. We should have a few more stuff coming out from different people. We'll have some more picks coming out. Justin went 3-1 this weekend. With the divisional playoffs. So that's a pretty good step in the right direction. Check out Joe's piece from last week on what team you should root for in the English Premier League if you're a Philadelphia fan. Check out at Something Philly on Twitter. Check out my Twitter at Ken the Ben, Alec at Alec NBA. Alec, do you have anything to send the people off with?
No, I ran out.
Good. We seem to have ended on a positive note here. And that's always good for us. For Alec, I'm Kenny. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
Love you guys.